Hello again and welcome to Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. The podcast is now available on all of your favourite podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher and Wooshka. Bodo Lenicek has run small businesses in North Queensland and he's the founding director of Yes Insurance Solutions based in Noosa. He was part of a six-man outrigger team that took part in the grueling Yukon River Quest back in 2012, surviving a flipped canoe and hypothermia in the wild, mountainous Yukon Territory in northwest Canada. A 41-hour paddle over 715 kilometres from Whitehorse to Dawson City. We'll hear all about that test of endurance and how his team fared up against an outrigger team from America in this podcast. I started by asking Bodo about the origins of his surname.
Okay, well, Lenicek is originally Czech, from Czechoslovakia. So man is actually Czech. So anything that ends up with a Czech is usually a Czech name. Most of my family is actually more or less German. There was a Czech in there a long time ago, but my dad came from a part of Germany that was Sudetenland, and it was actually lost in the Second World War to the Russians and then became part of the Czechoslovakia. So both my parents are actually refugees from the Second World War and ended up growing up in Germany, and then they immigrated in the early 60s to Australia.
Because you were saying your first name, Bodo, is a German name.
That's right. I had a German name, my next sister had a German name, and then the youngest one actually got an Australian name. So.
And were you born in Europe?
No, we were all born here, but when I was 10, we moved back to Germany for a few years, and I ended up doing all my high school there, and which is wonderful because we're in a ski resort area.
What do you remember about that?
Yeah, it wasn't too difficult for us because we actually grew up speaking German. When I started school in Australia, I couldn't actually speak any English because at home we always spoke German. And a lot of my parents' friends were German and we lived on a fairly isolated farm. So I think I was actually more German than I was Australian at that time. So yeah, I felt pretty at home there and we fitted straight in and just loved it. And the great thing over there was you only have half day school. So you pretty much finish at lunchtime and after school you can go running around in the woods. And in my case, I went paddling on the creeks and lakes. And then in winter, we'd go skiing. One of the main things that I remember is that 1 year just took forever.
What do you mean like, by that?
Well, if we ever started our summer holidays and we had 6 weeks holidays, I just think it'd be forever, whereas now, like, 6 weeks just goes so fast.
I think that's an age thing. I think the older you get, the time seems to move much faster, doesn't it?
I think so. Plus, we're so busy and got so many organised things happening all the time. I think, we rush too much now. So.
And what did your mum and dad do for a living?
Well, it was all different things. When we lived in Germany, they actually took over a fruit, flower and vegetable shop, and my dad is actually a qualified market gardener and a florist. That was his trade, what he learnt before he came to Australia. So we had a business in a small Bavarian town, and us kids got involved too. Like if there's a funeral or something going on, I'd have to go out in the forest and collect pine twigs and everything to make the wreaths for the funerals. Like mum and dad wanted us as kids to, you know, see Germany and see what was left of their family before they all passed away. And that was in the mid-70s. And back then it was actually very expensive to fly back for a holiday. So they decided to go back for a year's working holiday. So that was the plan. But then when we got there, they actually ended up taking over this business. One of my dad's mates' mum had the business and she wanted to retire and she was just going to shut it down. So anyway, they ended up taking it over and it was then established that we'd better stay 5 years to make it all work and whatever else.
So. And then after those 5 years?
Well, the plan was always to come back to Australia because we still had a farm in Victoria. And in 1980, we made the move back again. And I think that move back to Australia was actually harder than moving to Germany.
So. Why do you say that?
Oh, because I guess our English wasn't perfect then. And then just going back to a different school system. Like I'd finished my high school in Germany, but My parents said I got to do a year here so I learn English properly.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of assimilating back into Australia, learning English and all that. Was, it was a lot harder work than going the other way.
Were you with other kind of migrants in country, Victoria, or was it a bit isolating there?
Well, we actually sold the farm in Victoria. And when we moved back, we drove around Australia for 6 months, decided to sell the farm in Victoria and bought a farm up in the Atherton Tablelands behind Cairns.
All right. I know that kind of part of the world.
There wasn't too many migrant kids. There's a few Italians.
Yeah. Well, Lingham was a big Italian place, and Innisfail.
Right. Mareeba and
actually, a lot of Italians in Mareeba.
Yeah, Mareeba. So we were sort of in between. It was a dairy farm we had there. So,
yeah. You spent the rest of your kind of adolescent life, teenage, early adulthood life there in North Queensland?
Pretty much all my life, on and off. I did one more year of school there, but didn't really like school, so I left at 16 and started working for my dad on the farm.
Yeah.
And the plan was that eventually I'd take over the farm. But dad being a stubborn German and me being slightly German, we argued a lot. And then when I was about
the way the farm was going to be run?
Yeah, about everything, really. But when I was 23, my dad sacked me, so I got kicked out of home at the same time. And that's when I moved to Cairns. There I was wondering what to do with myself, and I'd always had a passion for kayaking and the outdoors and whatever else. So I started a business within 3 weeks with one of my South African paddling buddies, and it was doing whitewater kayaking tours down the Mulgrave River, and that was my first business. And from there, that business then developed into doing more adventure-type tours where we had abseiling and mountain biking and all that, mainly around Cairns.
You had the right spot there because there's a lot of backpackers around there.
Oh, that's
I just
right.
want to go back to this point. You said your dad sacked you at the age of 23. Have you repaired that relationship since then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dad and I... We've always, like, my dad is very heated. He gets excited very quick. And so we argued a lot, and I used to get sacked probably once or twice a month. But that one time, I just had enough, I guess. And within a week, we were friends again. So
whether you were at school or working on the dairy farm there, Bodo, did you ever have like a strong desire or dream to do something specific?
Oh, I really loved traveling. I loved all forms of adventure. I really liked being out in wild places, like climbing mountains or paddling down wild rivers that no one had ever been down before. And I just really enjoyed the outdoors. So I always thought I'd have something to do with outdoors, either in my working life or as a passion, which I still do now. By the year 2000, I'd established a pretty good tour business. But things are getting harder and harder with permits and legislation and having to have all the insurances in place, and it was getting more and more difficult to actually survive. Also, when I started in business, if you paid your booking agents 10%, they were quite happy. But at that stage, you had to start paying 25%. So it was really cutting into my profit margin. And at the end of 1999, I sort of worked out I was just working for everyone else to pay the bills, and I was trying to work out how I could get out of it. And then an American company that I was actually contracting for, I did a lot of their tours, ended up wanting to buy the business, so I sold it. And then I went traveling pretty much for 2 years. At that point, I was racing outriggers, and we just happened to go to the World Championships in Hawaii at that point. And from there on, I just decided I'd travel till I'd figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life. I'd met a lot of people on the travels and whatever else, and I always saw that people that were working in services, and particularly I met a couple of real estate agents and insurance people, seemed to have a very good balance between, lifestyle and helping people and making money. So I decided I'd probably want to get into real estate when I got back to Cairns. So in 2002, I went back to Cairns and applied for a couple of real estate jobs, and I ended up getting three people that wanted to hire me. But then I figured out you have to work a lot of weekends. Takes about 6 months to start making good money, and it really didn't sort of suit me because with outrigger racing and paddling, it was always on the weekends. In 2012, I took my Cairns outrigger team to the Yukon Territory in Canada, and we competed in the Yukon River Quest, which is the longest canoe race in the world. It's 715 kilometers. And pretty much I was the only one that had ever done a river race before. All my teammates had just done outrigger canoeing, which is open ocean based.
How many did you bring with you?
Well, it's a six-man team. Like, Outrigger Canoes are a six-man team, and the Canadian Voyager Canoes are a six-man team as well.
Okay.
So, anyway, we went there as no one really knew us, and that was actually our team name as well. We were the Down Under Dogs because, you know, no one knew us. No one actually expected us to do well at all or even finish the race because a lot of people don't finish the race.
700 and, what did you say, 15?
Yeah, 715 kilometres in, you know, it's pretty much in the Arctic Circle on the Yukon River.
So. Yeah. Over how many days?
Well, it's the first day you pretty much do half the race. You paddle about 360 kilometres.
In the first day?
Yeah, that's right. So we start at lunchtime and we paddled nonstop for 19 and a half hours. And then we got into the halfway mark. You have a 7-hour layover and then you start again and then you paddle flat out for about another 12 hours. Then you have a 3-hour layover and you paddle about 9 hours to the finish.
Talk to me about those conditions. So, first of all, it's extremely cold, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It's in summer and it's 24-hour sunlight, but the sun sort of does disappear over the horizon. Well, it doesn't disappear, but it's right on the horizon for about 3 hours, and the temperature went down to about 2 degrees at that point.
Okay. And what are you dressed in?
Well, I mean, to start in the middle of the day, we just pretty much had paddle shorts on and a thermal shirt, but then you have all sorts of layers that you change into as it gets colder. So then you put on a layer of thicker thermals, and then you have a fleece, and then you have a windproof jacket, and you have beanies and gloves. And yeah, so you're constantly changing as the temperature changes.
And what about fuel? So you said that you paddle for 19 hours?
19 and a half
for
hours.
For the first, how are you refueling your body and what's
well,
going on?
Well, I'd done the race a few years earlier and I sort of relied on a lot of goos and carbohydrates and all that, and I found that wasn't that effective. I ended up hallucinating and losing the plot a couple of times, and I'd done a lot of research and it was actually... They say you should have fats, so we actually use a lot of coconut oil and peanut butter and all that sort of thing in it. Total paddling time was 41 hours, and we're in that end plus 10 hours break all up. So, yeah, pretty much 2 days.
And how did you fare?
Well, we ended up winning.
Yeah, you won that one?
Yeah, there was an American team that won it 9 years in a row, and they were pretty much made up out of American Olympic paddlers. And they were the ones to beat, and they had all the publicity and everything. But I'd told my crew that we're going to beat them because they only ever get together once a year to paddle as a team, whereas we always paddle as a six-man crew. And on average, we're 13 years older than they were as well. But anyway, we on the...
So you were thinking that was a disadvantage that you were 13 years older?
No, we thought it was good because we're used to pain. We can handle pain better. And but all the publicity was that, you know, they were going to win. Like they'd won it 8 years in a row and they wanted to make it 10 years in a row. And then on the first media event, we actually got in our race canoe for the very first time. And after 200 metres, we flipped it. We actually capsized. So
after how long? 100 metres?
Yeah, about 200 metres. We capsized it. So all the next day on the front page in the newspaper was Aussie team upside down and rah, rah, rah. So we weren't rated very high at all, which was sort of an advantage to us, I think.
With the underdogs.
Yeah, that's right. Down on. And anyway, after when we started the race... I'd always said we need to get in front of these guys and just beat them into the ground and basically
psychological
warfare. But and that's what we did. We ended up getting about 2 hours ahead of them on the first leg until we actually capsized. We capsized at about 1 a.m.
And how did that happen?
It's still a bit of a mystery. I don't know. I think it sounds like there's a big boil just came. A current must have hit a big rock underground. A big boil came up and it hit us. I didn't even see it. Our number one saw it. I'm the steerer in the back. And number one saw it and he just said, watch out. And next thing we knew, we were upside down. And it took us about 20 minutes to rescue the canoe and all our gear and get it back on shore. And probably another 20 minutes to get going. And the Americans actually passed us then.
How'd you make up the time, the difference?
Oh, well, we actually struggled a bit till the first stop because one of our guys ended up getting hypothermia, so we're only paddling with five. And I think they got about...
He would have been a dead weight.
Yeah, pretty much.
Over at that stage.
So we got a... I think they gained about an hour on us after we led them for about 40 minutes. Then they were about an hour ahead of us when they got into the first stop. And yeah, we were a fair mess then. We could hardly walk. Our support crew had to pretty much drag us up the hill and give us some warm soup and put us in the showers, and we had a sleep.
Who does the who's kind of the coach then? Are you as the steerer? Is that when you have the kind of the locker room chat with them?
Yeah, I'm sort of the main motivator, and I got the whole team together. But yeah, and we had some good ground crew, like wives and girlfriends and whatever else. And they actually get briefed at the start. They all say when they get in the halfway, they'll all look like zombies and they'll all want to give up. But it's your turn to pep them up and make sure they recover and get going. Yeah, they did well. Yeah, I mean, the guy that got hypothermia, his wife wanted him to pull out. But anyway, he...
Can I ask you a question? Do you have like a reserve if that happens?
No.
Or if he pulls out, that's it?
Yeah, that's it. The whole team pulls out. But, I mean, we'd done a bit of study before, and they say if you have hypothermia, if you have a good sleep and you wake up the next morning, you're usually okay. And that's what happened. He went to the medical tent and they cleared him and said he's okay to go.
And when did you say, Butter? 2002? 2002 when you
competed? No, that was 2012.
2012?
Yeah.
Okay. And how often do the races happen?
It's every year, that one, that particular race.
Have you considered doing it again?
Yeah, I want to do it again. Most of the rest of the crew doesn't want to do it again, but I'll do it again. I just have to find someone crazy enough. The first time I did it, I actually did it in a two-man with a lady who actually lives in Canada, and we won that as well. We actually ended up beating all the men's crews, which was pretty epic.
But I appreciate you coming in and sharing some stories with us today. Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
Boldo Lenacek was my guest today on Conversations in Noosa. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed that, please feel free to share the podcast about with family members and friends on your social media channels. And thank you again to our iTunes and Apple podcast subscribers who have rated Conversations in Noosa 5 stars on that platform. We are available on all of your favourite podcast platforms these days, including Spotify, iTunes and Apple, as I mentioned, Google, Stitcher and Wooshka. And remember to keep coming back every week to check out new fresh podcasts on our In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations.